When it comes to autism, we often hear what scientists and researchers have to say about it, but what about the people who actually have it? This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Carson Cooper. On today's show, we'll meet Andrew Casey, who explains how he manages with Asperger's syndrome. His stepmother offers her perspective, along with Dr. Karen Berkman with the Learning Academy and Center for Autism and Related Disabilities at the University of South Florida. This larger discussion with Casey follows a remarkable story he produced when he was an intern for WUSF News. In this story, Andrew goes to the source to get the true definition of autism.
Autism is like being on another planet and you don't know who you are or where you are. And you try your hardest to fit in, and eventually it happens, and people accept you and understand you, but you'll always be a little bit different no matter what.
It's kind of more of a social disorder, I guess you could say. Is it something that you're able to grow out of? Yeah. With the help that I've had over the years, I managed to be able to get through my problems.
Autism to me is not really a disability for me. It's more so just a different method of processing information.
For me, there's no one solid definition. It could be a variety of things. It's often explained as being a spectrum, but there are so many different variables that can affect it.
You just heard from four individuals who have been diagnosed with autism, or a form of autism such as Asperger's disorder. One example, William Gregory, talked about how it was such a struggle for him to essentially adapt into society until one day William's mother managed to see a bumper sticker that said Autism Speaks.
And she looked it up and she found a description of the circumstances of like the condition and what it may be identified as. And they slowly came to realize, you know, this is very close to the kind of problems you've had. We actually were excited when we found out about it. We were like happy. Because it was like, finally, we have an answer.
Now, William Gregory is a comic book artist for a comic book known as Skullboy. And he is not the only one who has been able to grow in strength after learning of his diagnosis. Another example is William McCombie, a database administrator for the University of Florida. He said that many people will be diagnosed with the same form of autism. But even they have differences. He's learned that there are many different variables to even one spectrum.
There are people who have sensory issues, people who are fairly independent like myself. A lot of people don't have their driver's license, but I actually have mine. I can drive. I get around fairly well. And I can even fly an airplane. I have a pilot's license, and that's a giant leap from driving a car.
Speaking of great accomplishments, there's also Rachel Barcelona. She's won the title of Miss Teen American Spirit, is a model, and she's still in high school. I asked her what the characteristics are she most often associates with autism.
I would say lack of empathy. I'm not really an emotional person. I don't cry that much. Like, there was this one time when I was at a ceremony and people were crying because they were happy, and I just didn't get it. I think I was the only one who wasn't crying. I don't get why I do that, but I think it's nothing to be proud of, and I need to work on that.
At the same time, she has also found strength from her diagnosis.
I can memorize things easily. For example, we were doing my high school play, and everyone was scrambling to try and remember their lines. Oh my gosh, I gotta memorize. But I had to look over it one time, and I got it memorized. I don't want to brag about it, but I just think that's a good advantage if you want to be in theater, which I love.
I talked to another person who also has a passion for being on stage. Caleb Caton is a college student and the lead guitarist for the band Obscurity.
Just to be able to perform live in front of people, it's just kind of a way, I guess, to escape reality somewhat. I mean, it has nothing to do with the autism. I feel like when I get up on a stage, I just get to be myself. Hey, just give me a guitar. Let me play something I know.
The reason why I did these interviews is because if you ever listen to the radio or watch TV and it's about autism, you always hear it described by medical professionals. Very few times have I heard it described by those who have been diagnosed, the autistic people themselves. I always think that they can describe it in a very imaginative, very artistic sense. For example, myself, I have autism, specifically Asperger's disorder. When I was in the 10th grade, at some point I came up with the nickname Glitch. Reason for that is, a computer glitch is usually a software issue, and I stare off into space at least a dozen times a day. For me personally, having autism is sort of having a glitch in the system. It's not lethal, it's just a minor hiccup. It happens from time to time. It doesn't really stop you from achieving great things. My name is Andrew Casey, WUSF 89.7 News.
And now let's meet the incredible reporter who did that piece for us, our former intern at WUSF News, Andrew Casey. Welcome back.
It's good to be back.
That was an incredible piece when I first heard it. I just thought, wow.
Honestly, I didn't know it would be that awesome.
Well, it certainly was. And, you know, interesting what you were talking about there at the very end, that having Asperger syndrome for you is like having a glitch in your software. I think most of us can sort of relate to that. Describe what that glitch is, how it really manifests itself. You're performing a task, and what happens?
When I'm performing a task, this definitely happens whenever I'm in school, and more times when I'm at home, especially homework. If it's something that I'm if it's something I'm not really looking forward to, you know, doing math or science or whatnot, you know, I'm trying to find out, you know, X plus Y equals, and there goes my brain.
Yeah. I have to say, for a lot of people, that might be the case as well. Mm-hmm. And you were, Andrew, kind enough to bring your stepmother along with you today.
That I have.
Danielle Casey, welcome.
Thank you.
Incredible piece of journalism. What did you think when you heard that?
Oh, I cried. I was, like, amazed that this is my child doing this and how far he has come since he was first diagnosed. And fortunately, we were lucky he got diagnosed at a very young age when Asperger's wasn't well known. It really helped us understand him and how to help him achieve so much. Graduating high school, which nobody thought he would do, drive a car, get a job. There's a lot of things that they said he couldn't do, and he's proven every one of them wrong.
So you sound like now you're his stepmother, but it sounds like you have a very long history with Andrew. Were you his caregiver before he was diagnosed?
Actually, no. He actually came to live with us when he turned 14. He had been diagnosed for a couple years at that point. But as soon as he got the diagnosis, I helped his mom find some avenues to help him and also with the school, because he lived in Winder, Georgia, which was a very small town, and they didn't have a lot of services. So actually, the fact he was diagnosed in Winder was amazing. But they just didn't have the capability because it was so new on how to help him. So we talked a lot, and we always did what was in Andrew's best interest.
And you said he was 14 then. If I may, how old are you now?
23.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Karen Berkman is with the Learning Academy and Center for Autism and Related Disabilities at the University of South Florida. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
So the term autism, we hear it a lot, and it covers a wide range of disorders. How difficult does that in itself make it to diagnose?
Recently, there's been a new diagnostic and statistical manual, which is the source of many diagnoses in the mental health field. And so there has been a revision in that process of diagnosing individuals on the autism spectrum. And so what they've basically done is taken three areas that were highlighted in the last version of that manual and collapsed them into two. So now we are looking at autism spectrum disorder as the diagnosis. And it really focuses on a social communication issue and a restricted and repetitive behavior issue.
We hear terms like Asperger. We hear high functioning autism. I've heard that before. Are those actual clinical terms, or are those just kind of ways we describe, you know, the variations of the same disorder?
Autism, as it was defined before, is a spectrum disorder, and there were five diagnoses that fell under that umbrella of pervasive developmental disorder. And so autistic disorder was one of them. Asperger's disorder was also one of them. So when you talk about high-functioning autism, no, that was not a specific diagnosis, but people make that reference to, I guess, give a quality indicator to somebody's level of functioning.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, some folks describe their autism as where the environment feels hostile to them. Sights and sounds and even smells and tastes can be hyper-acute and sort of overload you, too much to handle. That's got to be really difficult to explain to somebody.
For them to explain to other people?
For you to explain to the world, because your story, as brilliant as it was, is something I never heard before. You are trying to explain to the world what it's like instead of, with all due respect to Dr. Berkman, you know, we hear from doctors a lot, but from folks who have Asperger's. So is it difficult to explain those types of feelings?
Honestly, in real life, I've never really seen that as much of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there have been times where, people say, hey, I can't handle large crowds or high-pitched noises, you know, especially feedback and all sorts of measurements.
You introduced us in your piece to a young lady, Rachel Barcelona, who says autism is like being on another planet, mm-hmm. and you don't know who you are and where you are.
Exactly. Now, she's, as far as I know, the exception to the rule because she's part of school plays, beauty pageants that require not being in a crowd, but
before one.
Yeah, just standing before a large crowd. And that actually could, in a way, she could see herself like on another planet. You know, I just thought this up, you know, orbiting the Earth on a spaceship. She could feel that way when she's on stage looking at the people.
It's funny because, you know, she talks about how she feels like she's on another planet, she doesn't belong. Well, when he stares off into space or when I can't connect with him and I'm trying to understand what he's going through, it's almost like he is on another world and I don't know how to bring him back to understand what he's feeling.
So it's interesting. Focus.
The other day we did that.
You know, mm-hmm. one word I'm not hearing a lot here is the word disability. And one of the folks Andrew spoke to in his piece, William Gregory, said autism is not a disability. It's just a different way of processing information.
I agree. It's mm-hmm. not a disability. He is capable of doing so much, and he is capable of being on his home at some point. We've always tried to encourage that it's not a disability, and we never should think that because somebody thinks differently or they process the environment differently that it's a disability. I mean, we wouldn't have Albert Einstein. We wouldn't have some of the geniuses that we have if we didn't have people who thought differently.
Dr. Berkman, the autism spectrum, as you described it, includes everything from difficulty socializing, appearing in crowds or before them perhaps, right on up to the inability to communicate. What is autism not?
Well, when kids are very, very young, sometimes when they're going through that process of having their families understand something's not quite developing, and that could be in the area of they're not developing language. Sometimes we see kids that do develop language and then all of a sudden start regressing in terms of their ability to speak or do other skills that they've had acquired before. And sometimes, you know, there are some things that kind of look similar at that stage very early on, and it takes a little bit of time to really identify which path is that child going to end up going on. So, yeah, it's a very important time to really spend really getting to know someone and not just, you know, in a 30-minute or an hour visit, but to really understand that child from a variety of people in a variety of environments to get it right.
Andrew, and your stepmother mentioned this too, there are a lot of well-known people who have talked about their diagnosis. Actress Daryl Hannah says she was blacklisted from Hollywood because she suffers from Asperger syndrome. Do you ever catch yourself trying to keep your condition sort of to yourself out of fear that you'll be treated differently or even worse, discriminated against?
As in, like, let people know that I have autism?
Yes.
Actually, I seem to have, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, grown out of my shell to the point where no one has ever noticed until I mention it. before I went to the Learning Academy, I was working at Walmart in the back room, you know, at the steel shelves, managing inventory. And it turns out nobody in the entire store knew that I had autism until I told them a few weeks before I had to quit to go to the Learning Academy. And every single person said, "You don't look like you have autism."
I never thought of it as having a look, Danielle. Is that something that you've encountered?
Yeah, actually I have. He used to have tics when he was younger, and they saw that. And also he has trouble expressing himself, and you could tell that it would take him longer to respond to a question. Mm-hmm. So if you weren't on his train of thought, forget it. You weren't going to get a good answer until he basically rebooted himself. And that's what we call it. And so there was a delay. And I think people who talk to him on things that he's interested in, it's great. But if it's a teacher or somebody who's trying to get him to switch gears, they definitely notice a difference.
We were talking about living with autism with someone who does, Andrew Casey, along with his stepmother, Danielle, and Dr. Karen Berkman with the Learning Academy and Center for Autism and Related Disabilities at the University of South Florida. There is more on this topic at WUSFnews.org, and we would love to hear from you on our Facebook page. I'm Kirsten Cooper. This is Florida Matters. This is Florida Matters. I'm Kirsten Cooper. We are talking about living with autism with former WUSF intern Andrew Casey, his stepmother Danielle, and Dr. Karen Berkman with the Learning Academy and Center for Autism and Related Disabilities at the University of South Florida. Dr. Berkman, autism, from the reports I've read, is one of the fastest growing disorders in the U.S. Are we diagnosing more? Why would it be on the rise?
Well, I think there are a combination of things that are actually happening, and the CDC also puts this information out as well, that we certainly know more about autism today than we ever have before. And so more diagnosticians are well-versed in understanding the signs and symptoms to look for. So I think we're doing a better job of diagnosing today. But I also do think that the prevalence has gone up. Why? That's the million-dollar question.
Is it possible some doctors might even over-diagnose in order to enable a child to receive special education?
I'm sure that does happen on occasion. I would hope the vast majority of the cases don't reflect that, but I'm sure that in some cases it does.
Andrew, how have you progressed over the years?
Progressed as in following instructions or?
Or, yeah, anything that you have overcome. You had those, as you called them, glitches in your software. Have you found patches for those glitches, fixes, if you will?
Actually, I'm still trying to figure that out. I will say driving a car is a big improvement.
I think the thing is we have to explain a lot of things. So I'll come up with a new terminology or a new colloquialism that he hasn't heard, and I can immediately see the confusion on his face, and I have to tell him.
That's right.
And so that's a big part of it, is that he needs to ask. Like, if he doesn't understand, he needs to ask, and he has trouble advocating for himself and asking questions. We have to constantly remind him, go ask the teacher if you need help. He was struggling with this Unix class that he's in now, and did you talk to the teacher? No. Well, can you please go talk to the teacher and see if they can maybe explain it to you or give you a little bit more time to do your assignments?
And over time, that becomes less and less something you have to do, and right. He sort of adopts, so yep. There is a progression.
He is getting better at it, and definitely
slowly, but it is getting better.
Slowly but surely.
The Learning Academy helped a lot. A lot with that.
A lot of parents are listening to what you and Andrew are saying about autism. Many are dealing with it themselves, and for many it's not easy. And first and foremost, they're kids, they're teens. I mean, they're going to drive you up the wall anyway. What do you say?
He's 23. He still drives me up the wall.
What do you say to parents?
Not every diagnosis is the same. Not every treatment is going to work for your child. You need to figure out what works best for your child, and you need to advocate for your child, and you need to make sure that the teachers, special education counselors, that they understand that and listen to what he says or she says and understand what they're feeling or try to understand what they're feeling. I have to help him a lot go through his emotions. The other day we had a friend leave and he was very frustrated, and I had to help him get to that point that he understood why he was feeling that way. So just listen to your child is what I would say, and do research and understand that no one treatment that will work for Andrew may not work for your child.
Dr. Berkman, it seems like there are plenty of services, or at least an adequate number of services for those under 18, you know, kids with autism and in that spectrum. What about when you turn 18?
That's a very important question, and I believe that we certainly don't have enough services to go around for all of those folks who reach 18 and then start in the adult world. This is going to become even more of an issue because if you're making the assumption that one out of 88 folks are being diagnosed with autism, they are eventually going to be 18. And the service system as it stands right now is certainly not prepared for that eventuality. We have to look at things around, you know, residential services, medical services, employment services, support services for clinical areas. And right now we are definitely not set up for that.
It's been more difficult finding him help now after the age of 18 than it was beforehand. Because beforehand, he's a kid and everybody wants to help, but then he's an adult and there's really no place for him. You know, we worry about, well, what if something happened to me and my husband and what would happen with Andrew? And we've had to make contingency plans for that.
I found this interesting article written by Ellen Notham. She calls it 10 Things Every Child with Autism Wishes You Knew. The full text is on our websites. And I want to get your thoughts on some of these. Number one, my autism is part of who I am, not all of who I am.
Yep, that's correct. He's definitely the autism.
It's only a percentage.
Overall, he's a great kid, and he does wonderful, and he takes the initiative. But it's those times that the autism definitely fully kicks in, that it's like, how do I explain this to him and get him to understand and get him to feel?
Reboot.
Yeah.
Reboot.
One of them is, I'm a concrete thinker. I interpret language literally. Don't say something is a piece of cake when there's no dessert in the room.
That is a good one. That's a definitely a true statement. Explain what you mean. Don't say, yes, it's a piece of cake. How about say, it's easy?
Yeah, don't. Some figures of speech, I understand. Certain words or use of words, I do need explaining on that.
Mm-hmm. Metaphors and idioms. Not good.
Stay away from those.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Listen to all the ways I try to communicate, body language and the like. You have to just kind of open yourself up to that kind of thing.
Well, he actually has very poor body language. He's when he was younger, he's very stiff and just didn't know how to give a hug. So it's true. You have to, each individual is different sometimes.
Which is surprising because today, over the past 15 years, if I didn't give somebody a hug or a handshake or anything like that, I've felt that, especially mom and dad, they're going to think, is he okay?
But that's very interesting that you brought that up in regards to being able to put yourself in somebody else's shoes, to be able to say that they might perceive you a certain way or be thinking about you a certain way. And that's a real difficult area for people on the autism spectrum. So you can see how far Andrew has come through the help of his support network to be able to understand the feelings and intentions and thoughts of other people.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I do have a couple things to say. Going back to what the media perceives autism as, I don't see it being looked at very lightly. I mean, over the past several months, I've seen commercials on TV saying, you know, one in every three children it could be at risk of having autism. What risk?
Yes.
Yeah, at risk of having autism. I mean, they don't specifically say what form, they just autism in general. You know, see this doctor for special treatment or to predict if your upcoming child will have autism or your current child, he has autism. Like I said, it's a minor glitch. I mean, from what you're describing it, for me, yeah, I'm a computer guy. I try to be. That's why I'm going to HTC for. From the way you're describing it, it's not a glitch. You're making it sound like a lethal computer virus or quite possibly a defective hard drive.
Well, leave it to an advertiser to overstate a problem in order to sell a product. Huh? Who knew, huh?
Which leads to people having, you know, autistic people just being overloaded with drugs like Strattera and Adderall.
One of the other top 10 things every child with autism wishes you knew is identify what triggers my meltdowns. I hate them worse than you do.
Absolutely. Yeah. And usually sometimes
true,
they come out of nowhere and you're just like, okay, honey, what can I do? So, yeah, definitely notice that. Pay attention.
And I like the one, focus on what I can do, not on what I can't.
We've done that his whole entire, ever since he was diagnosed. I didn't want to hear I can't. I know that sounds bad as a parent, but we would teach him ways to figure it out. You don't have to do it this exact way. There's a way. Do it the way that makes sense to you, honey. And that's been where we've been with that.
I think my favorite one is simply love me unconditionally.
Check. That's true. Got that covered.
Didn't mean to get all warm and fuzzy here for you, Andrew, but I certainly see that here with,
you want a hug?
With your family. Yeah, group hug here. Well, Andrew, Casey, you left WUSF as an intern on a very high note with that piece that you produced. What are you doing now? You're going to HCC?
Yeah, I'm going to HCC to get my general networking degree, learning the basics of how to be an IT guy, level one. Maybe I'll go further in more detail for other degrees like master's or bachelor's degrees in the near future. I want to get the basics out of the way because maybe my dream job probably isn't IT or information technology. Maybe I want to be a game designer or a CG animator. My general networking degree will be a big help.
You know, he's not giving himself enough credit. He's actually working full-time at Walmart on night shift and taking 2-day classes. So he has really come a long way, and he's doing a remarkable job.
When you spoke to the other folks in your piece, did you gain a greater insight?
There is one example. Caleb Caton, like in the story, he said in his interview, his passion for music is most likely not related to autism at all. What I believe, he could be right. He just likes to be surrounded by music as a means to escape reality for a short amount of time in every way possible, and including he forgets the fact that he has autism while he's on stage playing the guitar.
The one thing that's really hard, I think, is when somebody finds their passion. For Andrew, it's video games, and he could spend all day on video games. But how do you turn that into a job that they can do on the outside? That's the hard part. I know that a lot of kids in the student academy, it's hard to find a fit for them that includes their passion. And I think that's really difficult.
I can't speak for every parent, but I imagine a lot of parents of boys are asking that same question.
What is your passion?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sounds like your passion is computers, but I would not rule out journalism, Andrew. Keep us posted, okay?
Yeah.
Andrew and Danielle Casey, thank you so much for being here. Dr. Karen Berkman with the Learning Academy and Center for Autism and Related Disabilities at the University of South Florida. Thank you all. Great discussion.
Thanks for having us.
And as I mentioned, you can find links to the autism resources we mentioned, as well as Andrew's report on autism, on our Florida Matters website at WUSFnews.org. We also invite you to share your stories, your comments, your questions on our Facebook page. Our show is produced by Bobby O'Brien and is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.